This is the Capital Connection Unplugged, a podcast dedicated to conversations with industry leaders, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who are shaping the financial world. From Wall Street to Silicon Valley and every global financial hub in between, we uncover the connections, strategies, and insights that drive the engine of global finance. And now, here's your host, Quentin West.
This is the Capital Connection Unplugged. I've got Blake Daly here with me today. He's got an incredible short-term rental background, and we're here today to talk about boutique hotels. Hey, Blake, thanks for being here, brother. How are you doing?
Hey, what's up, man? Thank you for having me.
Nothing much, man. I'm glad you're here. So take us back a little bit, just for anybody that doesn't know who you are. How did you get started into the hotel industry? Because I know you didn't just, you were born one day and started buying hotels.
It's like, you know what? I'm going to born into a hotel.
Yeah, exactly.
My story, I think, is like a lot of people that are, you're hearing more people get into it now. They're converting a, you know, hotel, motel, commercial type property into short-term rentals and kind of operating as what I call a boutique hotel that kind of encompasses everything in the commercial side that's operating as a short-term rental. So I started out residential. I was an Air Force officer. I got two more days of active duty. But you know, I started as a brand new lieutenant, buying houses, fixing them up, renting them out on Airbnbs. So doing the Airbnb strategy. We built up a small portfolio of those and surpassed my W-2 cash or my W-2 income with the cash flow pretty quickly. It was like a year. I was like, dude, we got to go bigger. So we knew how to run and manage and furnish the Airbnbs. We had eight of them at the time, like 11 units total, but eight were Airbnbs. And I started looking at hotels and I found this little eight unit. I was like, that doesn't seem like that big of a jump, right? Like I'm already doing, and I know the workload of eight. And it's not like it's going to straight up double it because, you know, all the laundry's on one side, my cleaners are going to be there. They're smaller units, right? It'll actually help me get to a spot where I can actually hire somebody to do the guest messaging and stuff. So that's exactly what we did. And the numbers on that first eight unit, I call it boutique hotel, but it's really like a multifamily property that we completely renovated, you know, like literally full renovation, everything down in the studs. We actually tore down a wall and rebuilt it. So it would have been cheaper to just demo this thing from the beginning. The numbers look great on it. So I just started, I ran a meetup down in Panama City Beach where I lived at the time. I was like, hey, I'm doing boutique hotels now. Like, let me know if you know anybody, who has a deal or whatever. And sure enough, deals came my way. We ended up closing, I think, five boutique hotels in the next year after the first one.
That's awesome, man. So did you raise money for that deal or how did you finance that first purchase?
The very first one I did, so it was a debt raise, like it's basically a big burr. I had been doing like all the houses with the guest houses that we were buying and renting out as Airbnbs. We would typically buy them with either a private money lender or a hard money lender, and then use our own cash or a private money lender for the down payment and repair portion, and then refinance that out, get everybody their money back, and then we'd take our chunk of the refi proceeds and then go buy the next deal. So just the burr strategy of short-term rentals. So we did the same thing with this one.
And for people that don't know what the burr is, like burr stands for buy, renovate, rent, refinance, repeat. So he's just doing that on a boutique hotel size instead of a single family. Sorry, go ahead. Yep,
exactly. So we essentially just added eight units to that strategy, did them all at one time. So we brought in, I think, five private investors. It was like $550,000 or something like that we needed. We kept it just as a structured debt raise where they had liens against the property. And then once I refinanced, we paid, it was a seller finance. So we paid back the seller, paid back all the private money lenders that got their interest. And then I owned the property 100% and then, you know, continued to operate it.
That's awesome, man. So how did you get over that? Because I think most people, when they're first starting out, they hear like raising money or raising debt or whatever it is.
Yeah.
How did you get over that hurdle?
It's a big shift. I think the hardest part about it is like your own perception to it of saying like crossing over that barrier, saying like, I'm going to raise money now. And it's always seemed like I got to go ask this person for money or I've got to go get money from this person or this group of people or whatever. But if you like make the mindset shift to I'm not asking for money, I'm presenting an opportunity. Like I'm giving these people an opportunity to invest in something they wouldn't otherwise have if it wasn't for my hard work and, you know, the things that I'm doing, right? Not that you over glorify what it is you're doing, but you just recognize you're providing value to that relationship. and so are they. And you're not, you know, going in with your hand out. You're going them and pushing an opportunity in front of them and saying, hey, you know, I've got an opportunity here, and pitching, you know, the benefits and really presenting it as an opportunity. So that was the biggest problem for me. And I think it took, I don't even know how many, 10, 20, 40, whatever conversations to really get comfortable sitting in that seat. And chances are it's going to be the same for you if you're listening to this. Like the first time you call somebody and present your opportunity, you're probably going to sound, you know, like there's a scam or whatever, but it's all right. You get in the reps, you get better at it. You're just like anybody, any great salesman didn't start as a great salesman, right? A lot of mistakes and a lot of learning lessons along the way, but you just get more comfortable with it, right? The more deals you do, the more potential investors you talk to. And, you know, now it, the inertia to pick up the phone and, you know, present an opportunity to somebody or make the post, send out the email, like it's very low. Cause, you know, I've been doing it for the last 4 or 5 years. So you get better with it over time for sure. Just like any skill.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And before the show started, we were talking a little bit about your acquisition side. It sounds like you guys have acquired quite a few facilities in the past couple of years. Like, take us through that real quick. Like, what has your portfolio looked like over the past couple of years and how has it adapted?
Yeah. Really good question. So we've purchased 6 total and it has definitely adapted since we, you know, bought the first one. So hotel number one was that debt raise that I talked about. We had 5 private money investors. I refinanced and got everybody their money back. That's the simplified version of the story. Cause that was really over like 18 months. That was the smallest hotel, the cheapest hotel, but also the largest renovation and the biggest headache. We just dealt with all the problems, which, you know, in hindsight made all the other hotels that much better. Like I dodged the bullets on those other ones. Cause I learned the lessons on that first smaller one. So if it had happened on anyone, it's good to happen there. But we rolled the success forward, like partnered up with somebody and we bought another one in Panama City Beach where I lived. And I started negotiations on a second one in Panama City Beach, which would have been the third hotel. And my partner at the time, I think like, which I'm glad this happened. I think I had a chip on his shoulder. He's like, oh, I got to find a deal now. Like Blake's finding all the deals. So he found one in the Tahoe market because he was stationed at the Air Force base there. So we put those three in, basically like put them together as kind of like a fund. Like we put those three deals together as one raise. We brought in 2 bigger investors and closed those. And through our operations of what we're doing in Panama City Beach and now in Tahoe, we're meeting more property owners. We're meeting with more local people. And got a lead on another off-market deal. And we got seller financing on that as well. So that was then the 5th hotel at the end of that. And we renovated all those properties over about 2 years, renovated them, stabilized them, ran them out. We built our portfolio. I think it was 28 or 29 employees. It was doing really well. And then me and that partner had kind of different visions of where we wanted to take the company in the future. I wanted to continue to grow. Like I was having fun doing what we were doing, even though it was a heck of a lot of work. Like I think I thrive in those situations and it was just, you know, we're pulling each other in equal and opposite directions. So I sold my shares of that portfolio, took the funds, rolled them into now the 6th hotel, which is the one in the Smoky Mountains. It's 130 units and a wedding and event venue on 10 acres at the gate of the Smoky Mountains. So much bigger, but it's kind of like in that same size raise as the same size range as the other hotels, you know, put together as the portfolio, how we operated them. So that's the new project that I'm working on. We're closing that one in December, been fixing our operations and our systems and our team and everything over the last 3 months. And then we kick off our $3.2 million renovation next month in April.
Okay. Awesome, man. That's sounds like you guys got a lot going on.
Definitely got a lot going on.
So how are you finding these deals? Like if, let's just say people listening to this, maybe they've done a couple deals, but now they're saying, hey, I want to go get into the hotel industry. Like, mm-hmm. What would you say to them on how to find their first property in the next 6 months or less?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do is in a lot of different niches, you look for like your market, like where am I going to invest? I think hotels, or at least the kind of hotels I buy, like I can essentially buy anywhere. And it's more of a revenue metric that you need to look for instead of a unit count. Like unit count is kind of irrelevant because you could have a 10 unit that just crushes, makes 100K per unit. a year and you're grossing $1 million and you can put in your full team and have everything you need. So I would look for like hotels that do 500K in revenue plus. And that's probably in like your 10 to 20 unit range, somewhere in that range. And that like 500K is where it's kind of that minimum threshold of what you need to have a staff on site, or at least have like a property manager in that market that you pay to be the filter of the issues that would come up to you. And then you have all your operating expenses and then your debt out of that. So you want to, you know, make sure you're still cash flowing and have a good deal though. So that's why I say like you need 500K, because if you're at like a $200,000 property, you just literally don't have enough revenue to hire somebody to have them run the show.
Gotcha.
But I would find my criteria and say like, hey, I'm looking, you know, start calling brokers, looking online and looking at things that have the potential to earn over 500K per year. That's in that like 20K, you know, or 20 door size range. That's a value add hotel deal. And, you know, maybe a destination market or this, you know, area of the country, and kind of set your criteria and then look in your region. Because, you know, if you narrow down to one city per se, like I'm going to look in Oklahoma City, or I'm going to look in Houston for just boutique hotels, there might not be a big enough list of hotels in that market for you to find leads. And if you, you know, work that one list for a year, nothing sells, like you just get stuck, you just give up. No, I think you need to expand your criteria a little, or expand your region a little bit more, because you're going to buy an operating standalone business in a hotel. And, you know, if you set up the systems the right way, so you can kind of expand your search a little bit and focus on your criteria on a hotel that makes like 500,000 plus per year. But you can find them, you know, on Crexie, on LoopNet, on bizbuysell.com. Most of commercial real estate trades with commercial real estate brokers. So again, you know, the reps of picking up the phone, having broker conversations and building those relationships, so they think of you when they get a deal that meets your criteria that you set out. And those would be my biggest recommendations for getting out there and starting to stir up some deals.
Okay, definitely, definitely. So how do you typically run the numbers on a property like that? Because I know people are listening to this and they're probably going to some of those sites right now, like Crexie and LoopNet. They see all these hotels on there, but how do you figure out if it's actually a good deal? Because like there's cap rates and all these other things that we need to know.
A lot of pieces to it.
It can get, pretty confusing quick, especially if you're not used to looking at that stuff. So what would you
advise? Really, like when you're looking at Crexie and LoopNet, right? Like different people will tell you, like I've personally found deals on there, so I can attest it does work. Other people will say that's where deals go to die, or like everybody's already poured over those deals. You can't find anything on there. I think what you have to do is you don't go there looking for a deal. Like if it's clearly a deal, hey, this is trade down to 10 cap, it's going to make $1 million in gross revenue per year. You know, your net profit margin will be whatever, 200,000 per year. You know, let's sell this thing. That's going to get bought up by somebody very, very quickly. So really, you're not just looking for a deal. You're looking for ways to add value. Maybe there's a space on the property that could be a venue, or it could be, you know, can be converted into like an F&B, like food and beverage, you know, a retail shop or something like that. Something that earns extra revenue at that hotel. Or maybe there's a manager's unit, or there's down units that aren't being rented out, and you can renovate or convert that manager's unit into a rentable unit, increasing your income, and then the numbers look a lot better. So don't always take what's listed as face value. Like you have to look a little bit deeper at these deals, look what's missed, look what's being missed by the other buyers, and find ways to make deals. Like you don't just find deals, you got to find ways to make them. And then when you get into the underwriting, what you're probably used to, if you're listening to this show, is the STR side, because that's what you teach, Quentin. And a lot of times you'll look at the gross annual revenue, right? This unit will make 50K per year. My expenses are going to be roughly this. I'll have this much cash flow. Like, awesome. Move if that, you know, number at the bottom of that meets your criteria of what you're looking for, move forward. But with hotels, you really need to break it out to a monthly pro forma, because you're going to have higher expenses, right? You're going to have labor. You're going to have, your utility expenses are going to be higher. So every month, like your gross value of expenses is going to be higher. So you might have months in your slow season where, you know, you're not renting the rooms for enough and you're negative cash flow, you're, you know, breaking even, and you need those the income from the higher months to buffer out on an annual average, which those numbers might look great on an annual basis, but break it out by the month to know how much reserves that you're going to need. Because think about it, you're buying a business, right? You're going to need to make sure that you're still able to make payroll, even if it's in January in the slow season, nobody's coming to your market. Because if not, you're going to have high turnover that's going to impact your ability to operate. It's, you know, as a business owner, you never want to not pay payroll. So breaking out everything to monthly is a big thing. And then one of the big considerations, I was just talking about this with my mastermind group last night, is how you get the data sources for how you're going to project your income. Because a bigger unit with a kitchen and a bedroom, you know, more space is going to perform a lot closer to the data on AirDNA, like where you pull your short-term rental data. But a single, you know, standard hotel room with a single king or a double queen room is going to perform a lot closer to hotel data. And you'll want to probably pull a trend report from CoStar or from STR.com, which is sounds counterintuitive, but that's the hotel data, Smith Travel Report. You can get hotel data from there. And then if you're somewhere in the middle, like you got a studio with a kitchenette, that's probably going to be a blend kind of those two. And you'll fall somewhere in the middle. So you really need to be intentional about where you're pulling your data from and not just saying, looking at the AirDNA dashboard and saying, cool, this thing will make 50K a year. Well, like how does it actually rack up with, you know, the other comparable listings on the market?
Yeah, definitely. Now, I really liked what you said about finding the opportunity that other people are missing. So like if you can implement some kind of storage, I was watching a video the other day about a guy that bought a facility, and I think it was just an apartment complex. It wasn't a hotel, but it had a basement area that was completely unused. So he turned it into storage and rented out the units individually, which increased the value of the property by over $200,000. Yeah. So,
which is cool because these are hotels, so they're commercial property. So if you increase the income or the net operating income, the NOI, like that's what your value is based on. So as the NOI goes up, your value goes up. So adding storage, adding other revenue streams is going to increase your NOI, and you're adding equity to the property, which is awesome.
Exactly. Yeah, guys. So like with single family, as you guys probably are familiar with, like the value of the property is based on the comparable units in the area. With commercial, it's completely different. If you increase that revenue, that net operating income, that increases the value of the property. So you're able to force that appreciation by finding these opportunities to increase.
It's powerful, dude. It's powerful. Like I've owned houses for, you know, years now that, you know, they tick up in appreciation, whatever, but we're going to be able to, we've doubled hotels in, you know, 12, 18 months. So it's like, the huge jump in values because of your increasing NOI so much. Because a lot of these you're buying from owner like tired out mom and pop owner operators who aren't doing any marketing. They're not on Airbnb. They're not doing anything to like take inbound traffic. The properties themselves are outdated and old and smelly, need renovation. So it's easy to step into those situations, clean it up, renovate it, put the listings out on Airbnb and the other OTAs. And we've at least doubled the revenue at every single hotel. That's so awesome. When you can come in and it's not that hard to do. Like if you're buying these older mom and pop operated things, like it's kind of a layup as long as you're not overpaying for it at the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So what are you focused on right now more than anything, Blake? Is it getting more hotel properties, or what's the next step for you?
Yeah, I am super, super bullish on boutique hotels as a niche in general. I think more people are getting into it. I see more interest out of, you know, people making the transition from short-term rentals to boutique hotels like I did. I think over a matter of years, like we saw in, you know, multifamily in, you know, 2019 to, you know, 2021 to 22 or whatever, you know, cap rates started compressing because of the increased competition, which made property values go up. I think the same thing to a much lesser extent will happen to hotels because they are a little bit harder to run, the barriers to entry a little bit more. But trying to break that down with, like, you know, giving the education, showing people how it actually works, because it's much more attainable than you would think, right? Like a lot of these, my first hotels were in like the $1 million range. They needed 200K, 250K to take down. Like that's one investor, maybe two investors that you have in your phone, right? It's not that crazy to put these deals together. So I'm very bullish on it. I think, you know, we're going to see increased demand. I think like the guest demographics and like people's adoption of staying in boutique hotels is much higher. Like you get individualized spaces, great, amazing design, more amenities. So I think if you can create cool places that are more of an experiential stay, that's going to attract people in over what they get at a standard Airbnb. And now like the prices of like Airbnbs are more than hotels now. So if you're able to give more for less and a better experience, like people are going to flock to you. So I think there's consumer trends that are like showing boutique hotels doing much, much better. If you look at the ADRs and occupancies of boutique hotels specifically compared to, you know, economy, mid-scale, upper-scale, luxury hotels, like boutique hotels have the highest ADR and occupancy increases over the last handful of years. So that points in a really good direction with more in investor demand as well. More lenders are coming into the space and lending on hospitality now. The government-backed loans like SBA and USDA are prime for these kind of properties as well. So there's a lot of things pointing me more in the direction. So I think probably Q2, May, June this year, Boutique Hotel Fund is coming. So I don't know all the details yet of what it's going to look like. We're not actively raising, so that's why I'm, you know, bringing it up on here. But like those are just things that I'm starting to think about and put in place so that we can go buy, you know, groups of these boutique hotels all together and just execute our operational system that we know so well and have done on the last six deals. So we've seen that work really well. We know if we can, you know, have the funds available, we can go out and find the deals. I mean, just probably much like yourself, I get good hotel deals to my inbox every week that I'm like, oh, dude, I can't go take it down because I'm focused on this one. And, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't have the money to go do it right now. But
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So how difficult is it really to get one of these loans? Because like, I'm sure plenty of people are listening to this right now. Like I can barely get approved for, you know, $500,000 on my house. Like how can I buy a $2-3 million property?
The cool thing is they're commercial loans, right? So the loan is going to be based on the asset, not based on your own personal financials. The lender will likely still have you be a guarantor on the loan and like sign for it personally, but they're going to underwrite the property, not you. So like, you're never going to qualify for a, you know, $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million hotel to support that with your income, unless you're like racking in the dough. But most people are going to qualify for that loan. So it is a commercial loan based on the asset. And I will say 2023, like last year, I was under the longest I've ever been under contract was 7 months before we closed this deal. And a lot of that had to do with, one, we had two big investors pull out over $3 million worth. So we essentially had to raise the total amount twice. And then we had two banks fall out as well. So that's kind of the piece that 2023 was really, really tough for commercial financing. Yep. You have people defaulting on commercial multifamily left and right for all of the people who got a little bit too aggressive when they purchased in, you know, 2019 through, you know, 2022, they had construction loans or five-year terms that started coming due last year. And it really put a strain on a lot of commercial lenders. And they really wanted to pull back out of hospitality because they see that as a more risky asset class with higher default rates. You know, much of it's very dependent on the operator, but statistically, that's what the hospitality asset class was. So a lot of lenders pulled back. I think we went through like 50 or 52 lenders. Maybe more. I mean, we called everybody. Had a broker working it too. He called his whole list. Finally found one, and we ended up going with a government-backed USDA loan that wasn't going to close by the end of the year, which we needed for the tax benefits. So we closed with a bridge loan that we're only going to hold for like 3.5 months before we close next month. But yeah, it was a tough year for it. There's more people getting into it now. I think once the relationship is made with these commercial lenders and you prove yourself to them, my second deals, third deals with these lenders have been much smoother.
Yeah.
It just, if you have no track record, if you don't have a team to lean on, it can be hard. Like if you're trying to buy a, you know, I don't think a newer investor with no track record could have bought my hotel with 130 units, because any lender is going to look at that and say, hey, you don't have the track record, the experience, the credibility, you know, anything to go take it down a deal like this. But much, much easier to do so on like the 20 to 40 units. Like I didn't have much trouble at all on those. And I think that's going to be much more of the entry level type boutique hotel, something in that, you know, that 20-ish give or take range. Those are easier, and they're also lower dollar value. So like your local banks will be more willing to work with you on those. So I think those would be your best options, where would be local banks, credit unions, SBA, and USDA.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, cool, man. I appreciate you again for being here. How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, best way would be Instagram. I still answer all my DMs. So if you guys have a question about boutique hotels, how to underwrite them, finance them, anything you guys got, feel free to shoot me a message on Instagram. And it's at Blake J Daily.
Awesome, man. And guys, this guy really does help out. I mean, he's a wealth of knowledge. First time I reached out to him, he's more than happy to help me out with some things that I was dealing with. So don't hesitate to reach out to him. Contact him on Facebook. Thank you guys again for watching this episode of the Capital Connection Unplugged.
Thank you guys. See you. See you, Quinn.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode. We sure do appreciate it. If you haven't done so already, make sure you're subscribed to the show. This way you'll get updates as new episodes become available. And if it feels so inclined, please leave us a review and share the show with your friends. It is how new people find the show. Until next time.